Chapter 42. High Culture. I pushed on with my undergraduate studies at the Instituto Allende, located in the picturesque colonial town of San Miguel de Allende, a 4-hour bus ride northwest of Mexico City. For the winter quarter of 1975, I carried a full study load. My transcript lists my subjects as Project, Aesthetics, Psychology, Mexican Art 1, Mexican History, Pre-Conquest. I was secretly pleased to apply my graphic design training to all my assignments, in the hope that refined presentation would attract better grades. On weekends, I occasionally took the bus into Mexico City to spend time with my boyfriend Carlos Contreras. But mostly, he came to San Miguel to enjoy La Fantasía de Walt Disney. His scornful, oft-repeated description of the township as a fantasy created by the mix of authentic colonial buildings, cobblestone streets, the Mexican inhabitants, as well as many transplanted foreigners, like me. San Miguel's central meeting place was the beautifully kept Jardín, surrounded by impressive buildings. On the northern side stood the spectacularly ornate neo-Gothic Parroquia de San Miguel Arcángel, the Archangel Michael's Church. The colonnaded buildings on the other three sides contained retail outlets, the bank and the police station. From the center of town, side streets radiated out, flanked by substantial adobe buildings for both commercial and residential use. Carlos would often arrive into San Miguel late on Friday night. Ever resourceful, he'd climb the metal security railings to reach the second floor window of our love nest, and tap loudly on the window to wake me, a Mexican version of Romeo and Juliet. We'd catch up and then snuggle down to sleep before beginning a hectic round of weekend activities that could include a fiesta, or an exhibition opening, or a dinner party, or a nightclub, or a bullfight. As Carlos was garrulous and outgoing, he would occasionally arrive with friends in tow. I remember one fellow, Argentine lawyer Cesar Campion, who'd managed to escape the military dictatorship that was raging in Argentina at that time. Carlos met him somewhere in Mexico City. Cesar's story was a typical Latin American one, with politics at its core. In fear for his life, he'd fled Buenos Aires, leaving his wife and daughter behind. With little warning, he found himself 7,000 kilometers from home, traumatized and desperately in need of work. I imagine Carlos's family network helped to find him a job, as the Contreras clan was very well connected. Our first port of call was the National Museum of Anthropology, at the top end of the Paseo de la Reforma, in Chapultepec Park. I'd visited once before to explore the impressive salons jam-packed with artifacts from each of the numerous Mesoamerican civilizations that flourished in Central America, between 2000 and 300 BCE. The Olmec, Teotihuacan, the Maya, the Zapotecs, the Toltecs, and the Mexica Aztec. I was thrilled to be revisiting the collection. Little did I know that in a year or so, I'd be returning regularly to attend night classes in archaeology with my work colleagues, from the Catedral Metropolitana, who were studying there. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Our second port of call was the Palacio de Bellas Artes, to watch a matinee performance of the Ballet Folclórico de México. We arrived a little early, so, to fill in time, Carlos guided me across 8 lanes of traffic, to the Alameda Central Park, to see his great-grandfather, Jesus F. Contreras's sculpture, titled Malgré Tout. Translation, Despite Everything. It was of a naked young woman, lying face down, chained to a rock. I didn't fully grasp the meaning of the piece at the time, but nonetheless, it was an unnerving experience. The figure was so exposed in amongst the greenery that I had to resist the urge to take off my jacket to cover her nakedness. We then headed back to the theater for the performance. As is often the case, it's difficult to find words to describe a sudden and unexpected bolt from the blue experience like this one, but I'll give it a go. From the moment the curtain went up, I was transported to another world. I was totally entranced by the merging of color, music and movement, as the dancers portrayed a cross-section of traditional Mexican dances, adapted for the stage, and performed to a packed house of mostly tourists. After it was over, I floated out of the theater, aware that something had shifted. It was on that day I realized I'd fallen in love with Mexico and its people. The post-performance euphoria remained with me for some weeks after I returned to San Miguel, to begin the coursework for my master's degree. On reflection. Spring quarter of 1975. For Mexican art, modern, I researched Costa Rican-born Mexican sculptor and painter, Francisco Zuniga. Surprisingly, some 5 decades on, I still have my assignment, with my delicate charcoal drawings of his pear-shaped figures and supporting text, albeit a little battered. Rereading it, I'm surprised by the depth of understanding my 20-something self brought to Zuniga's three-dimensional work. The Ballet Folclórico de México. Before the matinee, my exposure to performance culture had been somewhat limited. My parents, who considered themselves cultured, occasionally went to the theater, but it was my father, who, after he left us, had the resources to remain involved in Sydney's art scene. When I was 10, as a special treat, he took me to see the Australian production of My Fair Lady. I was spellbound from the moment the curtain rose, particularly with the Ascot races scene, when the stage was filled with the cast dressed in dramatic black and white costumes. This scene left a lasting visual impression. My mother and I left Sydney for New Guinea in 1960, a couple of years after my family fell apart. At that time, Sydneysiders considered their city to be the cultural capital of Australia by dint of a larger population, numerous performance spaces and a vibrant collective of performers. But in New Guinea it was very different. There was no performance culture as we knew it, other than the occasional amateur production written and staged by expatriates to amuse themselves and those of us within Cui. But I was able to make up for what I'd missed, by attending as many Ballet Folclórico performances as I could squeeze into the 3 years I lived in Mexico, and later as well. Whilst completely entranced by the performance from the get-go, I was aware that the dancers embodied the enthusiasm and exuberance of Latin America, that was in sharp contrast to the buttoned-up Anglo culture I came from. Before long, I realized that I too embodied these Latin qualities. I felt I'd found my tribe. Mel Gray too. I was accustomed to nakedness at art school, and in my private life, but always in an enclosed space. What unnerved me about the Mel Gray II figure was that she was shackled and exposed to the elements. More recently, I have come to see her as a symbol of the Mexican nation. In the last 600 years, the Mexicans have been invaded and enslaved by the Spanish, then the French, and since have become economic prisoners of their northern neighbors. Since becoming aware of Mel Gray II, I realize how rare it is to see a reclining male body depicted in art. A man's achievements are usually celebrated with the subject standing tall and proud, surrounded by the trappings of power and success. On the other hand, women are often pictured, reclining, mostly in various stages of undress, their images often gracing spaces frequented by men. Facts. La Parroquia de Arc Angel Miguel was designed by Zeferino Gutierrez. Built in 1880, it said the church's facade is based on postcards he'd seen of European cathedrals. Lawyer says Tsar Campion. Carlos's friend escaped Argentina after the coup d'etat, when death squads hunted down political dissidents, and anyone associated with socialism or left-wing Peronism. Mexico has always had an open door to any Latin Americans in need of asylum. Jesus F. Contreras was born in Aguascalientes. Carlos, his eldest great-grandson, has taken an active interest in honoring his great-grandfather's creative contribution in the city of his birth. He is remembered for a series of sculptural panels for the Mexican Pavilion of the Exposition Universelle held in Paris in 1889. Five of the panels are now on display in the Patio de Jesus F. Contreras, constructed in 2016, along with a mausoleum, an archival vault. Lasting memorials, in perpetuity to this gifted sculptor's life and work. Both Carlos and I are descended from generations of creatives. For Carlos, at least four generations of Mexican artists and sculptors, and for me, from eight generations of British artists and engravers. Our genetic inheritance may explain why we were both drawn into art-related professions. When I met Carlos, he was already working as a photographer, whereas I wouldn't find my voice as an artist for another 20 years. The intervening years were spent acquiring a hodgepodge of disparate skills, all of which would be invaluable, though I didn't know it at the time. I've continued to carry my family's creative banner as a practicing narrative visual artist, here at the bottom of the world, and Carlos has done likewise for his family, as a highly regarded freelance ethnographic photographer.